Hello, and welcome to the Drama and Language Teaching Podcast. This is a podcast for teachers, practitioners, and researchers, and anyone else interested in the intersections between drama and theater and language teaching and learning. My name is Stephanie Giebert. I'm the host and producer of this podcast. In this interview, I interview Miriam Stewart, who is a teacher and teacher trainer from Ireland. And we talk about the Learning Out Loud project, which can be shortened to the LOL project. And maybe you know this acronym as standing for Laughing Out Loud, but that also makes sense in the context of the Learning Out Loud project, because it focuses on the role of humor in language teaching and learning. And now, without further ado, let's hear what Miriam has to say about her project. All right. Welcome to the podcast. I'm very glad that you could make it and that you agreed to be a guest on the podcast. I usually start each episode by having my guests introduce themselves briefly. So could you tell us who you are, what your background is, and where you currently work?
Sure. Thank you for having me. It's very exciting to be a podcast guest. So I'm Miriam Stewart. I'm Irish. I live and work in Dublin. And I started as a Montessori teacher, which is where I fell in love with drama. Then I moved into teaching English language. And then I did my master's in drama in education. So my speciality was teaching grammar through the body. Mm-hmm. But I currently work as a teacher trainer. And I do courses, a wide range of courses for teachers who come on Erasmus. So they come for 1 week of very intensive training. So we do drama techniques, we do English language, we do CLIL, creative skills, lots of fun stuff. So I'm sort of always expanding my repertoire and trying to bring in new elements. Something I learned for one course will then work in another. So yeah, jack of all trades, I guess.
Okay. And I specifically wanted to ask you about the project that you also presented at the summer school in Padua. So maybe you can tell us in short what the project is about, and then we're going to go into a little more detail later on. So yeah, what is the project about?
So it's called Learning Out Loud, or LOL for short. It's an Erasmus-funded project which aims at empowering language teachers to integrate comedy and humor into the classroom. And the two main aims are to increase teacher confidence and presentation skill, and then to promote student well-being and sense of belonging in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. And I would be curious about how did this project come about? So where did the idea come from?
So the company I work for, Europass Teacher Academy, they have a lot of centers across Europe. And in Prague, in the Czech Republic, their director is a stand-up comedian. So he was always interested in getting more comedy into the classrooms. He was already doing it naturally. So it sort of started from there. And then we had a lot of different centers involved. So there was Prague, Florence, Barcelona, Berlin, and then Dublin as well. So it was sort of an organic process of one person saying, I'm fascinated by this. And then lots of people from different backgrounds going, oh, like well-being, mindfulness, neuroscience, drama. So it was sort of, yeah, an emergent beast, if you will.
Okay. Right. So can you tell us a bit more about, yeah, what the project consists of, what you were doing? So what the background was? I mean, you did tell me a bit about it right now, but so who is it aimed at? What are you doing in the project? What are the outcomes?
So it was primarily aimed at for language teachers who are working with adult learners. But actually, a lot of what has come out of the project is also applicable to younger learners. So we started by researching what is comedy, what is humor, what happens when we use dark humor, what happens in the brain when we tell a joke. And we created a free online course, which has lots of different modules looking at different themes like comedy through the ages, comedy as protest, what happens in the brain when we tell jokes, how we connect with each other through humor. So each of our centers was involved in different parts, and I got to work on the contemporary comedy and the dark humor modules, which were very interesting. And then the focus became, okay, how do we apply this? How do we apply what we've learned? We've sort of put the research together into this module, this course. We really want people to be able to do something practical in the classroom. So that's where the focus turned to, we need an output. Let's design a face-to-face course. And that's where I said, please pick me. I would like to do this. So that became the focus in our center in Dublin, with me taking the lead on designing the course, doing practice runs of the course, and then refining it to create a handbook for anyone else who wants to run it themselves. The handbook is also for free. Because it's an Erasmus-funded project, all of the outputs, apart from the face-to-face course, but all of the outputs are freely available to teachers who want to try it for themselves, basically.
So if I got it right, so there's an online course, a face-to-face course, and a handbook.
Yeah. And the online course is self-paced, so you don't show up for a class. There are modules for you to go through at your own pace, and there's some tasks and stuff, but you just, you do it when you want to do it. It's not, there's no teacher directing you.
Could you tell me a little bit more about, the contents of the course? I mean, you already hinted at a couple of topics.
So this was really fun because we had so many different perspectives. So we had the stand-up comedy perspective, which was very much about teacher presentation style. So being more engaging, being more motivating your students, making your slides more interesting, having more confidence. And then we had the neuroscience perspective, which is like, how do we tell a joke? What's funny, what's not? And then I was coming in with the drama perspective, where I was focusing on what happens when laughter emerges spontaneously and organically. How do we create that atmosphere of respect and trust? So the course sort of follows that, where it starts from the teacher. So the first couple of days of the course are awareness of your own body and voice. What's my presence? We had the scenario conference in Trinity in May, teacher presence. What am I bringing just when I step into the room, and how can I expand that? How can I find my natural sense of humor, my natural comedy style? So we play with that. Then we look at what is funny, what is not for me, for other cultures. What makes a joke? What are the types of humor? Where do I naturally gravitate to? And what's okay in the classroom? So we have some interesting conversations about, when you have in a language classroom, you're usually going to have mixed cultures. How do you know this joke is going to land? What do you do if it doesn't? And then we move into like integrating humor into materials. So reading and writing materials, how can I make them a little bit more interesting and not just, write five sentences? And then we look at improvisation. So activities and games to work with. So you're still teaching the language content, but using the improvisation game to teach it so that there's a sense of connection, of fun, where laughter is happening naturally and organically. I'm not trying to force the joke. It's people laughing, community and connection, rather than, oh, you said something funny. So that's kind of the trajectory of the course.
Okay, so basically you already had the language and the drama, and the humor is a new component for you, or more or less newish, or something you explored in this project.
Yeah, definitely the deep dive into what makes us laugh and why is really
more
interesting.
Analytically, yeah.
Yeah, because I've been using drama in my classroom for a long time, I'm used to using humor as a way to make people comfortable. And culturally, as an Irish person, that's how we connect. We connect with jokes. We have in Ireland the concept of slagging, which is like to playfully insult somebody. So I share with my students, if I go home to my parents to visit, my father doesn't say, "Oh, welcome home, my darling girl, I've missed you." He says, "Ah, here comes trouble, lock up the cheese, she'll eat us out of house and home." So it's very much a cultural thing. But then figuring out what's happening in the brain when that happens was really fascinating. Our director in our center, his background is neuroscience. So working with him, Dr. Robert Schromborn, I should share his name. Working with him was really interesting, where he was very much theory-based. I was very practice-based. So we got to bring that together.
So combined both
Yeah.
perspectives. And I'd be also curious about the two modules that you mentioned you were working on specifically. Would you like to tell me a little more about those?
Yeah, so the first one was comedy in contemporary culture. So that was kind of a huge topic. And I was given free rein to talk about whatever I wanted to talk about. So it sort of became this research into how comedy influences culture and vice versa. So how it influences the media, how media stars have begun to use comedy as a way to sort of connect with wider audiences, what makes something funny and what makes something not funny. And then the one that was really my favorite was the dark humor taboos, because again, I got to do a deeper dive into the neuroscience behind it. Like I do have a dark sense of humor, which I use, discreetly and tactfully, not always in my classroom. But it's something I'm hyper aware of into personally, to not make a joke that I will find funny and someone else won't. And there was so much interesting research into, dark humor and psychology, dark humor and medicine, that there's a lot of psychological research, psychology, sorry, research into nurses and medical staff using dark humor with patients to sort of avoid patronizing them. Psychologists using dark humor with soldiers who've come back from war, who have trauma, who still need to have this sort of wall between themselves and what happened. And dark humor ironically creates a safe space for them,
Oh,
where
that's interesting.
they can make these horrible jokes. And there was one psychologist, I can't remember her name now, but I'll share it with you after. She had written about working with soldiers who had deep, deep trauma, and they were telling her these horrific stories, but laughing about them. And then she started to use the same humor back, and they just opened up. They felt safer to talk to her because she wasn't freaked out by the humor. She wasn't afraid of it. And then my favorite part was laughter as protest. So dark humor as a way to defy oppression, to defy things that we are afraid of. One of the more controversial aspects was this TV show, The Desperate Housewives of ISIS, which was written and performed by British Muslims to look at the phenomenon of British women partnering with ISIS men, sort of idolizing it. And the show was satirizing that. And the feedback from the general public was, oh, no, you can't make these kind of jokes. But that wasn't coming from the Muslim community. The Muslim community actually said, yes, please make fun of this because you diminish the power when you laugh at it. So I found that really interesting.
Yeah, that sounds quite interesting. I'm kind of thinking I might want to explore your course a bit more after we've talked. Just because from my personal teaching context, I mean I'm not work I mean I am working in a kind of multicultural school at the moment, so that there might be opportunities for me to also apply what you're saying, because I have students from very diverse backgrounds and maybe even partially traumatized students. I mean, I have very diverse students. It's just kind of, probably going to be food for thought. I haven't really thought this through, but I guess these ideas sound very interesting to me, because I often come to kind of a limit where I think I'm not sure how to react, how to interact with these students. And normally my reaction is to kind of draw back and be very neutral and be very not distant, but kind of stay on the objective surface. But there is a bit of a disconnect between me and the students I think, because I do have students, for example, from Ukraine. I have students from Syria and from other war affected countries. And I think, I sometimes feel a bit uncomfortable because there are topics I just don't want to touch on, but they do come up. But anyway, that's just kind of my personal background, that kind of where I think it might be interesting to look more deeply into this.
I think it's a really interesting area because you are treading very, very lightly. It came up a lot on the trial courses that I did with my colleagues, my fellow teachers. The sort of discussions we had, my personal viewpoint, and this is by no means what one should do, but my personal perspective is, if a student is making these kind of dark jokes about themselves and their own culture, personally, I'm comfortable allowing that if it's not freaking somebody else out. But I wouldn't rush to make a similar joke about their culture myself. I don't think that's my, I would never make a joke about Ukraine and the war to you, well, to anyone, but to especially to a Ukrainian person, even if they've made that joke first. But I would find a way to connect by making similar jokes myself. So I did a research project a while at the Sorgente project, which some of the listeners might know about. And we were working with very young refugee and migrant learners from war-torn traumatic backgrounds. And one of the boys, humor was his language. Humor was the way he liked to connect. And he would make jokes to me about, oh, when he was in school and he used to get beaten by teachers, and I'm not comfortable joking about that. But I would make jokes about Irish culture. I made jokes about the famine. I made jokes about like sort of meeting his energy level, but not content. So he felt comfortable to talk, but I wasn't joining him in talking about his trauma. And I really think every teacher needs to find their own line. And it needs to be something, I think it needs to be something that's sort of addressed on a whole class level of the idea of like safe space versus brave space. Brave space coined by Brian Arrow and Christy Clemens, but we talked about it a lot in the Sorgente project. We should be allowed to discuss uncomfortable things, but we need to agree on how we're going to do that. So that's something I want to integrate more into the course, actually, because I didn't really dig deep into it. But now after the Sorgente project, I want to flesh that out a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, with me and my students, the war is never really a topic. It's just at in the background always. It's something I haven't really figured out how to deal with. But yeah, just from my personal teaching context. Anyway, back to your project. So these were the two modules that you particularly worked on. What kind of teaching methodology did you apply? So I get it sounds like there's a bit of theory involved, but how did you make it practical? I guess that's what I'm saying.
Thank you. This was my big challenge because it was such a widespread project. We weren't always all clear on what the balance should be. And we were given a lot of choice, and sometimes too much choice is a challenge for creativity. It's nice sometimes to have a little bit of a constraint. So some of the other modules are purely theoretical, some of them are purely practical. I tried to find a bit of a balance. So for example, in the dark humor one, there are videos and songs to listen to and questions to answer. So sort of clips of different comedians, sorry. Like one example is there's a comedy song by Rachel Bloom, who's an American comic who does a lot of musical comedy, very dark sense of humor, but she gets away with it because she presents it in this very bubbly, sweet energy. So I have the song and then questions about not just the content, but how would you have felt if this was presented in a different way? She's making a joke about how we sort of present Disney princesses as these perfect, beautiful lives, and then she sort of situates it in like real history, in real life, this Disney princess would be married to a relative at the age of 12. She'd die of leprosy. So kind of trying to apply some critical thinking, like have a look at this video, listen to this activity. And then I also look at memes and how, for a lot of our students, the internet and social media is how they're connecting. It's how they're finding their people. And memes are one of the biggest ways they do that. So sort of challenging the participant to think about how could you use these in your classroom? Are there any you wouldn't use and why? So it's not so much assignment based, it's more about stopping and critically thinking about
Reflecting,
the
yeah.
theory. Exactly. And how you might apply it.
Okay, and I'd also be curious a bit more about the aspect of presence, because I think you shared something about that as well in the presentation in Padua, which sounded, of course, there will also be a bit of theory, but which also sounded kind of fairly hands-on the way you presented it.
Yeah, so it's sort of from two perspectives. So starting with teacher presence, what energy do I bring into the room? So for this, there's a lot of drama-based voice and body work. So playing with the voice, with pitch and tone, how much can I express just with my voice? So I have a game I call Banana Banana, where everybody gets a sentence. So what time is it? Can I borrow your phone? It's too hot. But you can only convey that information by saying the word banana. So you have to use tone of voice and face. And it's very funny and it's very silly. But then we dig into like what was easy to understand and why. We play it again where we close our eyes and we can only hear the voice. So is it a question? Is it a compliment? What's the difference? We look at the body and how we move and how we stand. So I do an exercise where we pair up. And you watch your partner move around the room. And then when they sit down, you have to move as your partner, and they have to guess who their partner was. They have to guess who's modeling their walk, their body language. And this is interesting because people kind of want to go like a cartoony, stereotypy version. So I try to bring it back to, let's look at what's really there, let's bring it together. Which is actually based on a beautiful workshop I did in the last DIE Days
That's
conference,
what I thought,
with
actually, with
Cecily
Dan
O'Neill's son.
Neil. Yeah.
I forget his first name, sorry.
Dan.
Dan, yeah, Dan O'Neill. It was just such a beautiful way to explore your own presence as a teacher. And that's, again, the conversation afterwards is really interesting. And then they walk together and you have to guess whose walk they're doing. And this, when I had mixed genders. And it was fascinating because there was one pair where there was a very slight, delicate woman who was very feminine and graceful, and her partner was quite a big, kind of stereotypically macho guy on the outside, at least. But then when they switched bodies, they did it very respectfully. They weren't trying to mock or mimic each other in a cartoonish way. And the conversation was amazing, where he was saying he felt empowered to be graceful in his movements, to drop his shoulders, to move his hips. And she said the same. She's like, it was so freeing to just inhabit a different body, which is kind of the point that you want to be authentic, you want to be your real self, but can you expand your range a little bit? So if I'm always in this area, can I move a little bit over here or a little bit over here, stand up a bit straighter or express myself with my hands a little bit more? Just try on. As we always do in drama, try on different shoes, see how they fit.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me. So I also sometimes do presentation training with university students. And of course we do talk about body language, and we do activities, and I usually say, find your personal style. So I'm not telling you this is exactly what you should do. Everyone has their personal presentation style, but maybe you can kind of find something that might make listening easier for your audience. If you never use your hands at all, maybe try it a little bit. But yeah, if you're not a gesture person, don't overstretch yourself. But yeah, so that sounds similar to what you do with your teachers a bit. I mean, I don't use as much drama, but I think it's the same idea of being authentic.
Yeah, I think it's so important because a lot of people, when they like came to the course, were kind of nervous that they were going to be turned into stand-up comedians. And I'm very quick to reassure them, I am not a stand-up comedian. That is not the goal here. The goal is to find where are you naturally comfortable and then push out of that a little bit, but still be authentic. So we did that with the joke writing and the comedy as well, where I gave everyone a really boring presentation and then they had to make it engaging in whatever way they wanted. So some people just changed the words, some people used images, some people got up and presented it, and then they had to do something, they had to take something they already teach and present it comedically, but they could choose how that was. So for my director, Dr. Robert Schwamborn, he's a very outwardly very serious person, but he has a fabulous sense of humor. But he would be very reserved in his body language. So his whole presentation was really deadbeat and sarcastic, and it was hilarious because he opened up with a really monotone voice where he was like, today I'm going to blow your socks off with the most exciting presentation ever. He was crying laughing. It was so funny. And then other people focused more on the physical side, and they were trying to make people laugh with physical humor. But it was very much about finding, as you were saying, your authentic self, not trying to be someone else, because that's uncomfortable for everybody.
And you said that some people were a little worried about being turned into comedians. So what kind of teachers do join the course? What's their interest? What's their motivation?
Yeah, it's been an interesting mix. They're all language teachers, working with, at the moment, working with adult learners. Usually people who feel a bit stuck. They feel like they're not connecting with their students. Their classes are getting a bit flat. Either the students aren't engaging, or they don't feel they're coming into the classroom with no energy themselves. The phrase that kept coming over and over and over was out of my comfort zone. I need to step out of my comfort zone. And then my reassurance is always, we are going to do that, but we're going to do it slowly with support. Step out of your comfort zone. Don't jump out. Pace yourself. And then also with your students, pace your students. Don't just throw them in the deep end and wonder why they're not enjoying your new and exciting comedic lessons.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, probably also figure out how far you can push them. I mean, depending on the age group, depending on language levels.
Yeah.
You have to adjust it in one way or, up or
Yeah.
down, I guess.
Yeah. And that was actually the point I forgot to talk about because I was going on about teacher presence, but we're also thinking about the students' presence in the classroom. So before you start any kind of improvisation games, you need to gradually introduce them to the idea that they're going to be moving or they're going to be doing something different. So I introduce a lot of strategies to gently nudge students out of their comfort zone, where they always, like we always do in drama, they have choice, the boundaries are clear, they can step out if they don't want to, and it's clear why they're doing it. I find that a lot with teachers who start to use drama, they love it and they're excited about it, but they're doing it because they like it and they haven't always thought through clearly, does this fit in this lesson? So I always write on my board purposeful fun. Fun is good, but there must be a purpose. I'm not just doing this because it's a nice game. Especially with adult learners, if they feel patronized or if they feel she's just doing this because she has 10 extra minutes at the end of her lesson to kill, it's not going to work.
I know.
So I always present it as we're doing an activity or we're doing an exercise to focus on fluency, to build your speaking skill, like you should know why you're doing it, and they should know why they're doing it. Is yeah,
That
step one.
makes a lot of sense. Yeah, absolutely. You said it was mostly directed at teachers working with adults, but you said it could also be applied to teachers working with younger learners. And actually, what I'm finding, I mean, I come from teaching mostly adults or young adults at university, and I started teaching at a secondary school about 1.5 years ago. And I found that humor is something that I think actually adults might be more comfortable with. Is that something that you find similarly, or did you find that your teacher said, "Yeah, no, my kids have no problem with humor"?
That's a really interesting question. I haven't had a discussion with teachers about it, but in my personal experience, I've taught from preschool to primary to secondary to adults, and I always, it's my personal style of teaching that I like to use humor to connect, but very different kinds of humor. So with kids, it's more physical and playful and silly, like I make faces and I use my body. With adults, I'd make like jokes based on language and verbal humor. I think it's really about being present in your classroom and reading the people there, and self-awareness of what is my tendency? Is it working in this group? One example, when I started to teach adults, I'm quite a jokey, sarcastic person, which in Ireland is, people get that you're being sarcastic. And I had a student, and I think she was from Brazil, walk into my classroom 5 minutes late. And I joked and I went, "Oh, what time is it?" And I made a funny face and I tapped my wrist. And I was sort of impersonating like an Irish mammy, like, "Oh, now." But she didn't see my face. So she just heard my voice. And she was walking in and she heard the voice and she sat down. And I didn't realize this. I thought we'd had this funny moment where I was like, "Of course, I'm not angry with you." And she came to me at the end of the class in tears and said, "You humiliated me in front of everyone."
No,
And
okay.
it was just this moment of, oh my God, like, we don't share a first language, but we also don't share a culture. So an Irish person would immediately understand that I'm taking off a stereotypical Irish mammy, like, "Oh, now, come in for your dinner." She missed that. She couldn't see my face. So all she heard was a scolding as if she was a child. And thankfully, we had a good relationship. So I explained to her, I showed her the face that I had done, and she laughed and she's like, "I did not see that." I was like, "I'm so sorry." But it was a really important moment for me to be aware that so many of the things I do, I assume are, at the time, I was assuming were obvious because they're obvious in my culture or in my sphere. And it doesn't always translate. So you are going to make mistakes. You are going to accidentally offend people. And then just being aware and hopefully having a relationship with your students where they can say to you, "I'm so thankful she said to me I wasn't comfortable." And I do a lot of work in my classrooms before I introduce anything risque. Make sure we're comfortable, make sure we can give feedback, make sure I'm approachable. And I think that's the most important thing. You need to have a solid relationship before you ask your students to take risks. They need to feel safe with you as a teacher. And you need to be comfortable with feedback. Like, I could very easily have gotten defensive and said, "That was just a joke. You're in Ireland now. This is how we relate to each other." Instead of going, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I did not think." Intention versus impact is a big thing we talk about in the course. Just because your intention was positive doesn't mean the impact was. And there's responsibility on both sides there. So, and this is where the brave space comes in. So if you're my student and I make a joke and you're offended, I'm responsible as your teacher to realize that might not have been the right thing to say. But you're also responsible, thinking of adult learners here, you're also responsible to say, "Okay, what do I think the teacher meant to achieve?" And I should be clear that that's not what happened. So that's one of the first things we talk about, intention versus impact. Being aware, being self-aware, and being aware of the people you're making a joke to. There's jokes I make to my friends that I would not make to my grandmother. And
Yeah,
the same is
obviously.
true in a classroom. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just the what sparked off my question was because I think with my university students, I comfortably use a style that's kind of self-ironic or self-demeaning kind of humor, like, oh, what have I done? Now I've lost my thread again, or where is my file, or where's, and I think students don't think, oh my goodness, she's so stupid. I think they know that, and they know that I know what I'm doing. But with teenagers, I'm not sure if that actually works. I think with some, I think if they do know me, they will know that this is just kind of my way of being, well, funny in a way. But if they don't know me, they might actually think, what this woman has, I don't know, is completely brainless.
That's a really good point. Yeah, that maybe, yeah, maybe when you first start with a group, not immediately jumping in with, but yeah, it's interesting though, because I do think it's important to be your real self. But I've had similar things where I'm terrible at maths, and I always, like, when I count groups, I always mix up the groups, or I have one extra worksheet. And my joke is always, "Sorry guys, I'm a language teacher, not a maths teacher. We'll figure it out." And most groups laugh, and it's like, She's modeling not being perfect, but I
Yeah.
have had people come up to me afterwards and be like, you know, it's okay. It's okay if you make a mistake. And I'm like, oh, I wasn't really upset about it.
Okay.
So,
Yeah.
yeah, it's I think there's a certain amount of accepting that there will be misinterpretation occasionally, and that's okay. That as long as they're misinterpreting it in a generally benign way and not being upset or offended. But yeah, then it's what do you do if that happens? Yeah.
Yeah, but it's, yeah, I'm just starting to think about things also how, of course, in school it's how do I say that? The not desirability of mistakes is a lot bigger. I think of course also in adult classes we want I don't know, accuracy, but I think in school it's penalized a lot more. So I think students are, well, they're more eager to spot mistakes also in a teacher. So maybe that is something that plays a role when maybe be careful, even if you're that kind of teacher says, whoops, now I made a mistake. And I think I need to introduce my younger students to the idea that, yeah, it's okay to make mistakes, and that doesn't mean you're stupid. You don't have to kind of think this person is, I don't know. These are the
No,
kind of thoughts that are kind of coming to me at the moment, so they're not very well thought out.
No, they're really connecting with my entire philosophy that personally I've been on a journey to be less of a perfectionist, and drama has been the cure for that. And there's three things I always have on my classroom wall, either as a poster or written on the board. And the first one is the goal is progress, not perfection. So you want to be growing. Perfection doesn't exist. Are you growing? Are you better today than you were yesterday? And then the other two are quotes from Irish writers. So the first one is Samuel Beckett: try, fail, fail again, fail better. That it's not a trajectory from failure to success. You have to keep trying and failing. And then James Joyce has a beautiful quote: mistakes are the portals of discovery. And I love that idea. If you're not making a mistake, you're not learning, you're not growing, you're not changing. So obviously my context is very different to yours. I'm working with teachers. I only have them for 1 week, which is quite intense. You sort of have to get people on board within the first half an hour of your course. And that's how I start. I start by saying, this is my methodology, this is my approach. If you don't like that, please feel free to discuss it with me, but this is why I'm doing it this way, especially when I teach the language courses, because I have people who say, you're not correcting my mistakes. And I have to tell them, well, I actually have been, but I just haven't been interrupting you to do it. So yeah, fluency versus accuracy is an interesting conversation. But this is where the comedy helps, because comedy requires risks, spontaneity, imperfection. And that's been one of the biggest, most interesting feedback from the participants who've done the course was that sense of freedom to release their own perfectionism, you know?
That was also something I was interested in. So what were the reactions of the participants to the course? So that this was one, apparently.
This was probably the biggest one. Firstly, self-awareness. So being more aware of their voice, their body. Habits that they have that they didn't realize they had. And then that awareness to take risks, to be playful. Those were the two things that came up a lot: taking risks and being playful, being spontaneous, which interestingly led to them being more present in the classroom, because you have to be present to change what you're doing and take risks. So I had one teacher in particular who, she's a wonderful planner. She always has her lessons planned months in advance, but she was afraid to let go of the plan. And she said once she started integrating like more comedic styles and more humor into her lesson plan, she realized she has to let go of the plan, because if she's observing her students, she's realizing, oh, this won't really work here, or this needs to be longer, this needs to be shorter. Actually, this activity would be better. And she's been becoming much more spontaneous and free. She still has her plan, but she's loosening it a little bit. And yeah, just lots of different teachers. Like one of the teachers works with like AI and IT with adult learners. So he's sort of teaching language through technology, and he's started to give them breaks from that and get them to get up and get them to move. So he's integrating drama into his technology
Okay.
courses, which fills me with joy. But yeah, the other feedback was that that's been passed on to their students, that because they're modeling being more relaxed, being more free, being more confident, their students are using the language more and focusing more on fluency. So trying to speak more, making more mistakes. So it's sort of passing on, which is the dream that, that everyone learning a language will take risks and play and explore and experiment. And but yeah, that was for me the most interesting thing, that the teachers are taking more risks themselves.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. Yeah, definitely also food for thought. Also for me to think about a little more. Just what would you think, or what would you say was for you the biggest challenge in this course, and what was maybe the biggest gain?
Oh, good question. I think the biggest challenge for me was being comfortable with uncertainty myself, because I had just finished working on the Sorgente project, which had a lot of clear structure and focus. And then this was a completely different kind of project, but I was still bringing that mental energy to it. So I was sort of expecting that I would be doing a lot of very academic research with lots of references, and with clear guidelines, but this project was not run by Dr. Erica Piazzoli. So it was slightly different. And being comfortable with so much freedom in an area that was quite new to me. And also, yeah, the self-awareness in not being judgmental of other people's styles. Which was then really good to take into the actual course. So I had this experience of working with people I hadn't met face to face. We're just emailing each other, correcting each other's modules, giving each other feedback, really different perspectives, stand-up comedian, neuroscientist, yoga teacher,
Whoa.
drama instructor, and which we know is wonderful, but it was a really interesting moment for me where as someone who uses drama, I'm always preaching about collaboration and working with different styles. And then realizing, oh, I kind of like doing things my way. I need to learn to be a bit more open. So that was quite humbling in a very good way, where I had to sort of expand my own horizons, working on a team of people with really different approaches to me. And then learning so much more than I would have if I had just sat at home and done what I wanted to do my way. And then putting that into practice in the face-to-face classroom, but then also having to do it online. So we did a face-to-face version, and then we did the entire thing in a physical classroom, but with students online as well. And that terrified me.
Well, yeah, that sounds challenging, yes.
Yeah, hybrid classroom. I was like, no, no. And actually, it was fantastic because every single day I had to rethink my plan. I had to change my materials. I had to prepare, but then also improvise. So I learned so much from doing it as a teacher. And then the biggest gain was watching people come in on a Monday morning, stiff and awkward and slightly skeptical. And then by Friday, just blossoming into these incredibly funny, witty, warm people. Watching people discover how good they are at something and taking a risk and finding out that they can do it. I love that. I love that moment. Especially with teachers who have been teach I had a lot of people who were teaching for 20, 30 years. A lot of older participants coming in going, I need to shake things up. And I admire that so much, like to do a job for several decades and then say, do you know what? I want to get better.
Oh, that's courageous.
Yeah, so and then that sort of inspires me as well. So it's this lovely cycle of, yeah, inspiration and failure and mistakes and learning and inspiration again.
Yeah, but it sounds really rewarding.
Yeah, it has been, yeah.
Going forward, so this course is something that you will continue to teach?
Yeah, so in the Europass Centre in Dublin, we're running it. It sort of runs depending on demand. So it's on the website every 6 weeks that it's up as an option, but obviously we need people to sign up to run the course. But then it's also running in the other centres. So it's also running in Prague, Berlin, Florence, Barcelona. And that's what's interesting because we obviously have the same schedule and the same materials, but it's going to be very, very different in each centre. And I think that's where it could potentially grow and sort of spread and spiral and become a bigger thing. That my focus is obviously very much on the drama side of things. But Carmina, the director in Prague, who is a stand-up comedian, he's focusing much more on the stand-up comedy and the joke writing. In Barcelona, I think the trainers are very focused on well-being and mindfulness. So I would love to sort of spy on everyone else's courses and see where that could blossom and maybe lead to more projects and more courses down the line. But yeah, even within my own center, a lot of the trainers who train in other areas like IT, classroom management, CLIL, they've come and they've observed sessions and they're now implementing those sessions in their own courses.
So
So,
it's yeah, it's kind of multiplying in a way.
And for me, the important part isn't so much the activities, it's more the philosophy of getting rid of perfection, being more conscious of your own presence, helping your students to connect through playing together, through exploring and experimenting. And those were the key words that came up with participants: spontaneity, playfulness, connection, warmth, laughter, joy, exploration, experimentation, which for me is what learning should be. So I'm really hoping that those core elements will sort of spread out, not so much the actual activities, but the values behind them.
One more topic was sensitive topics in the classroom in the connection with humor. Would you like to share something about that?
Yeah, I think that's probably where most people's fear or trepidation comes in. Like, if we use humor and comedy, or what if this happens? Similar to using drama, you know, you open it up for people to be creative, you lose control of where things go, and it can be unexpected. So I had one moment in one of the courses where we were doing a game called Meet My Friend. So it's an improv game. I introduce you and then you have to become the person. And I was taking part in it as well to model the activity. So it was myself and three or four teachers. It was a small group. And the person who was giving me a character said, "Oh, this is my friend, you know, Anastasia. She is a prostitute who works in Dublin, and she's a really popular prostitute, but she's thinking of changing her career." And I was getting ready to become this person, and another teacher said, "That's really offensive." And we just paused for a second, and I said, "Okay, would you like to explain why?" And she said, "Sex workers are workers. I'm so sick of this stereotype of, you know, prostitutes are just dirty and funny, and you know, this really annoys me. It's a very antiquated viewpoint." And the teacher who had given me the role was getting really angry, and I said, "Okay, you know, we're going to hear both perspectives. This is why we're doing these activities. This will happen with your students as well. You need to be prepared to have the conversation." And I said to her, "You know, why did you choose to give me that role?" And she said, "Because I thought it would be funny, because it contrasts with your personality. I thought it would be something interesting." And we just had the conversation where both of them were sort of explaining how they felt. And I sort of refereed a bit. And I said, "Okay, so now we need to decide what happens next. So you both have your viewpoints, they're both valid viewpoints. We spoke about intention versus impact. And I was like, are we both happy that, you know, this person's intention was not to be insulting, was not to minimize the role of sex workers? And this person's intention was not to shame you or embarrass you." So then I asked both of them, "Okay, I still have to do a character. Do you want to change it? Do we want to take the word prostitute out of it? and give me a different character, like a farmer or a tennis player? Or do you want to just change the way you presented it? And I was really happy. The teacher who'd given me the role said to the other teacher, you decide, what would you like to do? And she said, I'm okay with you keeping it. Just don't use that word prostitute because it's got such negative connotations. She can be a sex worker, but can you give it to her in a way that's not insulting or offensive? Which is a big ask. But what the teacher did was she framed it as, this is my friend. She's a sex worker. She's really bad at it, but she thinks she's the best. And just shifting it so it was much more about my self-delusion than the work that I was doing. Then I had to jump in, but I avoided completely talking about the work. I just kept talking about how fabulous and amazing and desirable I was, and they were it resulted in laughter. But we had such a great chat afterwards about, if this happens in your classroom, are you comfortable to let this conversation happen, or are you just going to shut it down and change the activity? Because it's not what I did is not necessarily the it's not about a right or a wrong way to handle it. But we had spent a week working together where I knew that they were both capable of having that conversation respectfully and sensitively. If it happened on day one in my classroom, I would probably just change the activity and then come back to it later in the week. So that's been really interesting, digging into those moments where it happened. And this is where I'm rambling a bit now, sorry, but this is where for me it's really important that the learning is experiential, that the teachers come
Oh,
to the
yes.
course and they do everything. Because I just showed them slides of the activities, they don't have that experience of panic and awkwardness and oh God, what do I do? So they feel it as the student,
Yeah,
so
that
they
makes
just
a lot
think,
of sense.
yeah, you can't plan what you would do if you haven't felt it from the other side. So yeah,
Yeah. Thank you
that's
for
been.
sharing that. Was really interesting, really inspiring, and yeah, lots of food for thought. So thank you for agreeing to be a guest on the podcast. And yeah, wish you all the best for the future trajectory of your project.
Thank you so much. It's such a joy and an honor to be asked.
Thank you again. All right, so that's it for this episode. And a little reminder, if you want to learn more about the project, the link is in the show notes. And for anyone who would like to know more about drama and theater in language teaching and learning in general, be reminded that we have the online DIE Days coming up. So an online conference on drama and education, meaning mostly drama and language teaching. And this is taking place on October 25th and 26th, 2024. And you can register for the conference. It's a free conference. Join us for workshops and exciting talks from practitioners and researchers. You can find the link for the registration on the Drama Pedagogik website. This is www.dramapedagogik.de. You can also find the link to that in the show notes. And I hope you tune in again next time for the next episode. Until that, take care.